We're talking about trampoline parks on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And in recent years, a study by the Journal of the American Academy of Pediatrics showed that emergency room visits due to trampoline park injuries increased by nearly 1,100% from 2010 to 2014. And that study also found that compared to home trampolines, jump parks are producing more serious injuries. So some states have developed regulations around them. Wisconsin is not one of those states yet. Are you a parent or a guardian? Have you ever been to a trampoline park? How old were your kids? What was their experience like? Have they ever been injured? And what was their injury like? How did it happen? Join in at 800-642-1234. Chris Larson is a Democratic state senator from Milwaukee. He's looking to draft a bill this session to try to bring more regulation to Wisconsin trampoline parks. Senator Larson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kate.
So there are hundreds of these trampoline parks all over the country. At least 8 states have taken some steps to regulate them. Wisconsin isn't one of those. What was your initial reaction to this?
Well, I was kind of stunned. This is one I kind of stumbled into. Me and my wife took our kids to a trampoline park. We have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. And when we went up, we asked, is this safe for a 4-year-old? And the attendant assured us, oh, yeah, it's fine. Signed the waiver, went on our way. That time was fine. The next time we came back, within 15 minutes, she had broken her leg, her tibia, which is the lower left. And the place was less than helpful, which we found stunning. Nobody helped us out. Nobody gave us any guidance. There was no place to report it. And after we got her taken care of, got this checked out, went and looked at the laws, and it turned out that trampoline parks are not regulated at the federal level. They're not regulated at the state level, and only 7 states have actually moved forward on regulating them in any way. So it's no surprise that the number of injuries has spiked from 2,500 just 6 years ago to the number it is now, which is over 18,000 as of 2017. So we're looking at options of trying to make sure that one, the public is aware of this, that they're not regulated, that the parents really need to look out for the kids while they're there. Two, that there's going to be mandated reporting of injuries, and make sure the places are keeping track of that. Right now, they're not required to, and in many cases, they don't want to try to keep track of it because then they'd have the liability. And then the third thing is making sure they have a minimum level of liability insurance so that they are covered when people are injured, when people are those folks can be taken care of. That'll force them to make sure that they're doing the right thing and taking care of people while they're in their business.
Well, the first thing you do when you walk in the doors of a trampoline park as a parent, you start signing the waivers. You start putting your initials next to all of the boxes. And when you later asked to get copies of those disclaimers, you said it took quite a bit of effort. What about that process that you went through there?
Yeah, it was absolutely stunning that they said, oh, no, you have a copy of it. And we checked and no, absolutely don't. They didn't send an email to us. They didn't give us a copy. And they said the only way, you can go online and get a copy of one, which was also not true. The only way we were able to finally get a copy is going back. And then you have to go through the entire process of signing one just to be able to get another one. And then you have to make a copy there. So they are, in the case that we went, the place we went to, they were reluctant to turn over even what we had disclosed. In other states where these injuries have gotten out of control and people have taken action, the trampoline companies have actually, these trampoline park companies have actually gone back and said, oh, you've signed this, and therefore you're in mandatory arbitration. You can't take this to court. And these things have been signed to be, they've been found to be adhesionary, which means that they can't be held up in court, that you don't waive all of your rights when you do it. But still, again, it's a question of when a kid gets hurt or when an adult gets hurt at one of these places, their first reaction is to just blockade and not give information and to resist turning things over. And right now, up until now, they've gotten away with that.
We're talking with Chris Larson. He's a Democratic state senator from Milwaukee. You can join in this conversation about trampoline parks and regulations at 800-642-1234. As a parent or guardian, do you feel there should be regulations in place for trampoline parks? And what are some suggestions that you have for the lawmaker? You can call in. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Senator, currently Wisconsin state law regulates amusement parks, thrill rides. It's defined as a device that carries frequenters in an unusual, entertaining, or thrilling mode of motion, or any vehicle providing entertainment or transportation to, from, or within an amusement area. So some highly technical legal jargon there. You've proposed adding trampoline parks to this definition. What do you propose there?
Yeah, I mean, right now there's a diction. One of the ways that trampoline parks get out of being regulated is because it's not technically a ride. As you just outlined what the statutory definition is, and I imagine most people don't know that. So one of the ways that another state has done this is they just basically added trampolines as being a type of ride. That's what they did in Kansas. That's one of the easier ways to try and just fix this. Again, these are all things that we're looking for. And then in that way, they have to make sure that they're abiding by safety standards, that there's an inspection, and that they had to adhere to basic levels of safety on these. So again, that's one of those things that we're looking at to just try and figure out how to make sure that people, that these things are as safe as I think a lot of people already think that they are.
And one of the things on your list here is meeting with Brad Paff, the secretary designee of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, to look at this definition of amusement or thrill rides. What are you hoping to gain from that meeting?
Yeah, well, we called over at to his office right away to find out, okay, what's happening with the regulation of trampolines. And they said, well, we don't regulate it at all. And so what we're looking at is to see if there's a way to be able to add this through a rule change. So if we don't have to pass, if we don't have to move forward with legislation and go through that process, if there's a way to say that these are going to be regulated the same way as when you go to your church festival or go to an amusement park are. So if there's a way to be able to get the same level of safety without having to go through the entire process of trying to add this and trying to make it into a law, we'll go about doing that. I think we're trying to make sure that we can get this done as soon as we can to make sure kids are safe.
So if the definition of amusement or thrill rides can't be expanded to include trampoline parks, what would be part of a bill that you would draft for this session?
Yeah, if that's the case, then we would go forward with making sure that there is a clear level of reporting for injuries. So it would either be the administration, the group that you outlined, VACAP, or another one. But there would have to be mandated reporting of injuries to the public so that the public would be aware of it within a certain time span. Some places have it within 24 hours of an injury being found out at a place. Some places it's 72 or 1 week, up to 1 week. Mm-hmm. So just making sure that there is a place where people can see how many injuries, what kind of injuries are happening in a place, I think will guilt some of these folks into doing the right thing and making sure that they're safe. Making sure that there's a minimum level of liability insurance. A lot of states mandate a minimum of $1 million. And so I think that's, again, another way of making sure that these folks are safe.
And we have to pause. We have to pause right here with State Senator Chris Larson of Milwaukee. You can join in here, 800-642-1234. Do you have a trampoline in your own backyard? How do you monitor safety at home? And what do you make of trampoline parks? Have you been to one? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to this conversation in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at trampoline parks on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In the Fox Cities, two former big box stores in Grand Chute will be turned into trampoline parks. Meanwhile, lawmakers in Capitol Hill are pushing to regulate trampoline parks. U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal is sponsoring legislation that would hold businesses accountable for the injuries occurring inside jump parks. In many cases, visitors sign waivers with forced arbitration clauses, meaning they give up the right to take their cases to court. Here in Wisconsin, State Senator Chris Larson of Milwaukee stays with us. He's looking into putting regulations around them. Getting your thoughts as well at 800-642-1234. Let's go to the phones now with Lou joining us from Oconomowoc. Hi, Lou.
Hi there. I was just commenting to your screener that I was just had my granddaughter out at a trampoline park here in Waukesha, and you do sign the waivers, and you're basically warned that it's well. But my question was, and here's where I was going with this. It seems inconsistent to me in my mind and my thought pattern that the state's going to step in and regulate these things. I have no problem with them regulating that these places are kept up and the springs are good and whatnot. But I live in the city of Oconomowoc, where we've got two lakes here, and we've got numerous public beaches. The city runs at these lakes, and it's swim at your own risk. You go to a state park, more state government, it's swim at your own risk. It seems to me that it's very inconsistent for the state to try to mandate something on an activity, and I would call this an activity, versus like one of these little fairs that comes through with all their rides and stuff and all the mechanical stuff. But they're trying to restrict an activity that the state has drawn hard lines with for generations that you do understand that as a parent, you are responsible for your child.
And Lou, I want to, because we're short on time, I want to get Senator Larson to respond to that. I mean, Lou's saying, yeah, we want these to be mechanically sound, but there is a burden of regulation because there are lots of things that are risky out there. Going swimming.
For sure. I think that the difference with this is that these are artificial environments. These are profit-making ventures, and they, right up to this point, they have calculated it into their profit margins that they're not going to have to be responsible for the number of people who are injured at the year in their business. And I don't think that's acceptable for any business. I think if you went to a church festival and there was a ride where people kept getting hurt day after day, and not just, minor injuries, but broken bones, I think a rational person would say, well, wait a second, why are we allowing that ride to continue? I think there's a basic assumption that when a person walks into a business that it's going to be safe, that their child is not going to walk out with a broken leg or worse. There have been 7 people who died in the last 6 years from these places. And if you want to see a parade of horrors, just Google trampoline park injuries, and you can see numerous videos that people have uploaded of what's happening at these places because they're unregulated.
Well, the International Association of Trampoline Parks said recently there are parks that do not adhere to industry technical standards and do not operate with safety at the forefront of their agendas. So how can we change that here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is, right now we're in the information gathering stage, and I think I outlined some of it before the break, but another one is just trying to see if there should be a minimum weight or a minimum age, and making sure that there's a clear set number of kids that can be on one trampoline at a time. And so we're open to all of that right now. We've been receiving comments at my office almost immediately after this story that you referenced broke, of other parents who've gone through the same horror. So we're gathering that, very interested in other folks who, if they have those, to contact my office so we can gather those and think of the best way to move forward with making sure kids are safe.
Let's go to Stephen now, joining us from Madison. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. What's on your mind here?
Well, I took my kid a few years back to one of these parks, and she got hurt. To me, it was just a quick decision. Don't go back. This is what a trampoline is designed to do. There is nothing you can do to safeguard that. It's just a parenting, basic parenting. It's not, the human body is not designed to be jumping. Once you put them on a trampoline, it's prone to get injured. To me, this sounds like pretty silly.
Yeah, so Stevens is saying avoid these parks at all costs. Let's go to Dwayne in Weston with thoughts on this. Dwayne, hi.
Oh, good morning, Kate. Years ago in the late 90s, our kids were using trampolines, and our primary doctor had told me that some of the most catastrophic bone injuries he's seen was when a large kid comes down on the tramp gets compressed way down, and then there's another smaller child in the air that comes down at this exact moment when that tramp pops up and hits his foot. It's a spiral fracture all the way up from the ankle, halfway up the shin, maybe to the knee. And these are catastrophic injuries. They're big surgery, $100,000. So when people, say don't regulate them, it does affect other people with our policies going up. But we let our kids go on the trampolines, but with, never get on with bigger kids, try to be with one other person your same size. And with these profit ventures, there needs to be some oversight, in my opinion. I still remember that doctor saying that about it's when a heavier child hits that tram and it compresses. So that's my comment.
Senator Larson, what have we heard about from the medical community and in your interactions firsthand as they worked on your child?
Yeah, when we were finally getting my daughter's cast off, the x-ray technician joked that trampoline parks were keeping them in business. They said that this is one of the most common injuries that they're seeing or coming from trampoline parks. I was just out with a friend yesterday who's a nurse, and she said, yeah, if it wasn't for trampoline parks, it would be a lot slower in emergency rooms. So the injury that the caller referenced, the spiral fracture from a double jump, that's one of the most common things that they say that they're seeing. Or another kid, a much larger kid falling on top of a smaller kid because they're not being separated properly. These are the things we're trying to prevent. And I think it's on the state, it's on the community to make sure that the public recognizes all of these risks. Otherwise, the first time people are hearing about it is whether it happens to their kid or whether it happens to a friend, and they're saying, oh gosh, well, I didn't know that. I didn't recognize those risks. So that's what we're trying to do.
Let's go to Paul in Appleton. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
What's on your mind here?
So I'm 18, so I have more young – I have experience with it in my past more than I suppose a lot of the parents will, more firsthand experience. And so I've been to these parks, not recently, but I just remember – afterwards, every time I was sore all over, and everyone's sore all over. I mean, that's not unexpected. But then I have friends who are more than sore, because I mean, of course, we're sore because it's such a strain on the body. But then I have friends who have like sprained joints. They have broken bones, and then their parents just try to get in contact with whatever jumping place they are, and there's nothing they can do about it.
Paul, have you seen trampoline parks become perhaps less of a popular place to go to with your friends, or do you still see your friends going there?
I mean, I believe it's become a less popular place, not because it's more dangerous, just because as we become older, that's less something we're interested in doing.
Sure.
But in terms of like the age group that those were popular, I've not seen any slow in that. They're still a pretty popular place in my area.
Well, Paul, thanks for calling. Senator Larson here, as we wrap up, last 20 seconds, we're seeing movement on Capitol Hill to regulate trampoline parks with Senator Richard Blumenthal pressing forward with legislation. Are you keeping an eye on what's going on the federal level?
Yeah. I mean, right now that because there is no federal legislation, we're interested in what they get up to. But I think we have to look at a Wisconsin-based solution, too. And so we're going to be moving forward, encourage folks to continue the conversation by contacting my office and see what we can do.
Senator Larson,
thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. Chris Larson is a Democratic state senator from Milwaukee, and we've been talking about potential legislation around trampoline parks here in Wisconsin and what that would look like. Coming up, moviegoers turned out in droves for the new Avengers film, and we're going to be talking about the reasons we're lured to the big screen to watch the trials and triumphs of superheroes. Have you seen the new Avengers movie Endgame? What did you think about it? Did you wait in line? Did you get tickets? We're at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite superhero? Who do you identify with? You can call in, you can email ideas at WPR.org, tweet us at WPR Mornings. By the way, no spoiler alerts ahead. We will stop you in your tracks as we talk Avengers Endgame. That's after this news update right here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us. We're talking about superhero movies and the reasons we flock to the theater to see them. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. After 11 years, 21 films, we've accumulated dozens of characters in the ever-sprawling Marvel Cinematic Universe. More than 100 million people went to see the Marvel superhero epic Avengers Endgame during the film's worldwide opening and left all box office records far behind. A word to the wise: this is a no-spoiler zone, and if you've seen it, you can tell us about the experience, but be warned, if you reveal something important about Endgame, we will stop you in your tracks. We'll find you. So, who is your favorite superhero? What is it about their powers or their personality that sets them apart from the rest? And what do you like about the Marvel movies? Is it the storylines? Perhaps it's the high-tech special effects. Tell us what you think. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Chris Yogerst is an assistant professor of communication in the Department of Arts and Humanities at the UW-Milwaukee. Chris, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
So we were very clear at the outset here. No spoilers during this conversation. You plan to adhere to this, true?
Yes, no yes? spoiler alerts. All right. I'm actually waiting until next weekend to see Endgame.
All right, I need some blood here, like sign in blood. Okay, so, you know, Americans spent $350 million on Avengers Endgame over the weekend, more than $1 billion across the globe. Without having seen it, what about this film is generating all these crowds?
That's a really good question, and a lot of people are asking that. I think it's really – we have, like you said, 11 years worth of movies that are building up to it. And if you think about it, it's bigger than just this one movie. I mean, you think of any time – you can compare it to like a series finale at a TV show, right? You know, if you think of like the series finale of Seinfeld or Friends or these shows that go on for like a decade – here you have movies that have went on for a decade, but you also have generations of people that have followed these characters in the comics. So it's bigger than the movies. It's bigger than this 10 years, 11 years. And this movie is just a culminating event of a magnitude I'm not sure if we've seen.
Well, and these superhero friends, they just keep growing. The crowd gets bigger. It's like I can't imagine, you know, you got Thor and Iron Man, Captain America, Black Panther, the Hulk, Black Widow. How do we relate to all these characters? How do we even keep them all straight?
Keeping them all straight is difficult because I was telling you before, I teach a course on superheroes and mythology with a colleague of mine on campus, Mark Peterson, who's a philosopher. And we're always daunted by how many characters there are and how many versions of each character there are. So it's like I'm really into Batman and he's really into a bunch of other characters. And every semester we're learning from students who found a new story arc that tells us something about the character. What's great about these movies that Endgame is capping off is that it's everyone's kind of on the same page. Everyone has followed these. You have all these movies that connect, but somehow most of them still stand alone as really fun movies as well. We just taught Captain America, the first film. And they just work. So they work on a multitude of levels, as standalone films and as a franchise that really, really gets people excited.
Yeah, they have that secret sauce of you don't have to be invested for over a decade, that you can pick it up at any point.
Yeah, for sure.
And that certainly helps at the box office. Let's go to Mackenzie in Whitewater. Mackenzie, hi.
Hi. This is like the best topic ever. So
it is.
So starting back, I'm remembering, you know, the series really started picking up, you know, when they started doing the Thor and the Guardians of the Galaxy, and they redid Spider-Man, but, like, way back when, like, Iron Man first came out, which was, I think, mid-2000s.
It was 2008, I think.
It was 2000 what?
I think it was 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So I was, like, 18 then, and I was obsessed from that first movie, and we still had that. Before that, we had the Spider-Man played by Tobey Maguire, too. So there was still all of that, and I was just following Spider-Man, Iron Man, each one that came out. It was just, each one was just better than the next. I just loved it. And when they started coming out with Captain America and tying it all together, it was just it was exciting. It was just the most exciting thing, and it was like, awesome. I just loved it. And it was something that we could all look forward to. And I have a family, so it was something that we could all join in on. And it's really special. It's brought some pretty great moments.
Oh, Mackenzie, so you kind of seen this as a progression. It's really built the characters growing. You're growing kind of with the
yes.
storylines.
The Hulk movies, the Thor movies, Guardians of the Galaxy, all my kids have watched it. And one day it was just like, they have a movie together. It was awesome.
Well, yeah. Thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. You know, this is fantasy, though. What makes superhero movies so irresistible, so relatable?
That's one of the things we talk about a lot in class, is that there's something that, there's a long argument against superhero narratives that they're just wish fulfillment or it's just kids stuff. But there's something much deeper than all of that that makes it transcend age, makes it transcend generations. And it's what you said, is there's a relatable element. There's something about all of these characters. And when, for example, when Superman was first written, he was this perfect character. You couldn't beat him. But as these characters evolved, they got villains that could defeat them, could kill them, that made it interesting, that made it you didn't know what was going to happen. It wasn't guaranteed win. And also you have characters they have major character flaws. So they're inhuman or they're super in certain ways, but they're also very, very human in other ways that we can relate to them. Mackenzie mentioned Spider-Man. Spider-Man is really – he's young. He's insecure. And, you know, even as adults, we can look back and remember being young and insecure at certain points. So even though these characters have these amazing abilities and they can topple these massive villains, they still have things we can connect to.
And they can also be funny and human in a way.
Definitely.
You know, Marvel has had a little bit more of a lighter tone. There's some really dark things in DC Comics. Have the two gone in a little bit different directions, or do you see some parallels?
I mean, there's definitely parallels, but I think that both have branded themselves in interesting ways. I mean, it's kind of unfortunate because Marvel has done a lot better with their films, undoubtedly. But as a tried and true Batman fan, I love the DC stuff. It's definitely darker. It's definitely edgier. But it's nice to have two brands of superhero companies, in a sense that, and of course, there's much more beyond that. But it's nice to have the humor. And even when you look at the Marvel films, the humor, it's not the same with all of them. It's one thing for Iron Man, and it's a whole other thing for Guardians of the Galaxy and what James Gunn has done with that franchise. So even with the humor, there's a type of brand of it for anybody coming to these movies.
We are talking with Chris Yogerst. He is our guide. He teaches film at the UW-Milwaukee, and you can join in with your comments, your questions about superheroes at 800-642-1234. How have superhero movies affected your life, your family? Have they taught you something about the world or made you consider a situation from a different perspective? When did you first become a fan? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We have someone here who made has an email, an example of the obsession. One of our morning producers, Courtney, is a friend from Illinois who recently saw the movie. His wife was very much pregnant at the time. They agreed it was okay that he attend the 3-hour movie, but he spoke with the box office to make sure that they find him if his wife called, just in case she went into labor. And sure enough, she did give birth just a few days later. So, you know, this is 3-hour movie. This is giving several hours of your life to this.
Yeah, it's incredible how long. But I mean, the previous film, Infinity War, was also nearly 3 hours. I think it was 2 hours and 45 or something like that. I mean, it's a lot of time. But they also have 10 years of movies to wrap up. So it's almost impressive that they can do it effectively 2 movies at 6 hours total. Mm. But even for people that haven't seen all of the films, like, I mean, my wife hasn't seen all of the films. So we watched Infinity War last year, and now she's excited to go back and visit some of them and some of the characters she doesn't know as much about. So there seems to be – I think that adds to the staying power. Even newer fans that have caught the last bit of the franchise can now go back to the beginning and watch all the origin stories.
Well, explain how, like, the Easter egg thing works. Like, what is up with this Easter egg thing?
That's interesting. I mean, and that's something that goes way back in film history. I mean, Alfred Hitchcock did it with his cameos in all of his films. And now with the Marvel films, we got Stan Lee doing it, which has been great. And I'm sure most people teared up at the thank you, Stan, and Captain Marvel, which was sweet. But I think I guess that's another layer of I guess something to connect to. It gives us something to look for in subsequent viewings, things we can notice that we didn't know before, or when we learn new character arcs or learn the history of certain technologies, we can find little pieces of it in there. And I think it's just something else to search for.
So they drop little things in the movie that could impact the future, or, you know, what is that concept really?
Well, for sure. I mean, it's some of it is actually when it's done at its best, it's really good writing. And
okay.
One of the things that just pops in my mind right now, one of my favorite Marvel characters is actually Peggy Carter. And when they had the Agent Carter show, they had one of the characters was Jarvis. And then when you watch, which was Howard Stark's assistant, when you watch Iron Man, you realize that Tony Stark named his one of his technologies after Jarvis. So it's little things like this. You can start making connections between them, and it adds another layer of depth that you might not have expected.
And it's also a conversation starter with someone who may be next to you or your friend saying, hey, did you notice this?
Exactly.
So it does kind of build a community. Do you feel there is community around superhero films?
Undoubtedly. A few years ago, I presented at a panel at Comic-Con in San Diego. It was the first time I was at that event. And it's amazing the community that's around these characters in pop culture in general, but definitely with superheroes, and as well as how accessible the community is.
Mm.
You know, it's not something that's real standoffish. You know, there's no snobbery with it. It's, you know, if someone wants to get interest in superheroes and they go to Comic-Con, they will have no problem finding conversation.
Marvel started laying the groundwork for Endgame more than a decade ago, as McKinsey told us, beginning with that first Iron Man movie in 2008. We're talking about this Marvel Cinematic Universe journey that we're on, looking at why it is so appealing to have our superheroes amongst us. We're at 800-642-1234. Chris Yogerst is our guide. He teaches film at the UW-Milwaukee. Back to this conversation in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. Avengers Endgame has been seen in theaters by more people more rapidly than any film in history. And we're talking about what draws us to superheroes, why they smash box office records. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Where do our pop culture crushes on Iron Man, Captain Marvel, and their super friends come from? And lest we forget the supervillain, Thanos.
Dread it. Run from it. Destiny arrives all the same. Now it's here. Or should I say, I am.
Listen to that voice. When did you first become a fan? How old were you? Did you start out with movies or comic books? And who first told you about these larger-than-life characters? We're at 800-642-1234, and Chris Yogerst is our guide. He teaches film at the UW-Milwaukee. Let's go back to the phones now with Nick joining us from Madison. Hi, Nick. Hey, Nick. Are you there? I don't think we have Nick. Let's try Grace in Platteville. Grace, hi. Nope. I'm sorry. We don't have Grace or Nick. So, well, these are famous characters, Chris. How do writing and directing influence these storylines?
That's a good question. And that's one of the things I think that also helps drive the interest in these movies, because each one of the films has a different flavor to it. You have all these directors that are taking different stances to the characters. And when you compare Marvel and DC before, you have look at what James Gunn has been doing with the Guardians of the Galaxy, and you look at what Christopher Nolan does with The Dark Knight, and even going with DC, even what Patty Jenkins did with Wonder Woman. These are all very different movies, and there might be somebody who loves all of them, or maybe just one of them, and they all have something really to be found that brings the character to the life in a really awesome way.
And you're a philosophy professor. You've teamed up to teach a class on superheroes and mythology. How obvious is a connection here?
I'm actually a communication professor. My colleague is a philosophy professor, so he's really the expert on that. But the mythology lines up quite well. What we do to organize that is we look at Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, which influenced George Lucas. It's how he structured Star Wars. But the hero's journey tracks with pretty much all the superheroes. There's a call to adventure. There's a lot of times a refusal of a call. There's mentors. There's thresholds, trials. There's a reward. There's a return back to their ordinary life. All of this stuff tracks through mythology, and superheroes are just modern mythology.
Let's try Nick again in Madison. Nick, are you there?
I am here.
Awesome.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. One thing that I'm not going to say disturbs me, because I love the movies and I love the storylines of where they went. But you've got characters that I've been following since I was a child, like the Hulk or like Thor, which is two of my favorite characters. Now, within these movies, they have turned these two characters, they really took the basis of the characters out of the movies, in these last two movies. I don't understand that. Like the Hulk.
Oh, dear. And Nick just dropped at the most dramatic point there. Chris, can you pick it up there for him?
Nick has a good point that, this goes back to there are so many storylines with all of these characters, and you've got to just pick bits and pieces of them to fit into the movies. But that gives us something to learn from the comic books. You can only fit so much into a 2-hour movie, and you could do on one level a lot more with a graphic novel. So if you want to learn more about one of the characters, go to the source material.
So how do the high-profile celebrities factor into these superhero films?
It's interesting. They particularly with this franchise, I feel like they've really taken ownership of their characters in a really cool way. You listen to Robert Downey Jr. talk about Tony Stark, and in a lot of ways, I think he just is Tony Stark. I think he's just playing himself, but he does it brilliantly. And these characters own these roles. You think of even Captain America and Black Widow and everybody. You couldn't picture anybody else playing these roles. We mentioned Hulk before. I mean, a perfect Hulk with a Wisconsin native playing the
there
title
you go,
role.
Mark Ruffalo.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Kenosha in the house.
Exactly. and they just – I think they take ownership of these roles. I think that's what really makes it so big and so interesting to continue following it.
Is Stan Lee's impact going to be seen well into the future, and what he has done to comics and where we're headed with these epic films?
Yes, I think so. I mean, he was very hands-on. He's very much – his history – I mean, anyone who wants to learn more about Stan Lee, read all the books about him, because his journey is so fascinating, and he really played a pivotal role in not only bringing comics out of almost destruction in the 1950s, which is a whole lot of interesting history there, but he was a cheerleader for this industry for so long when it was on the ropes, and helped bring it into not only prominence as a comic print medium, but also ushering it into Hollywood as a big budget film medium. And this is something he had been working on since like the 80s, maybe earlier than that. Mm-hmm. And it's really come to fruition. And I'm glad he was alive to see what it became.
Let's go to Lance in Antioch, Illinois. Hi, Lance.
Hello. Yeah, one of the things I wanted to say was that one of the things that made Marvel so successful, at least in this last run since Iron Man, this long 22-film arc, is that they were staying true to the comic characters. So many of the previous films that they did, like Daredevil, didn't really stay true to the characters and weren't as successful. Once Marvel has taken over many of these projects, they were casting well and staying true to what comic book fans also wanted, where they were keeping that loyalty of comic book fans.
Lance, thanks. Chris, do you agree they kept tight with the comic books?
I think they did. I mean, Daredevil's a great example where you have the movies with the one movie with Ben Affleck that was what it was. But then you have Netflix and Marvel doing the Daredevil TV series, which is much closer to the Frank Miller graphic novels and is really exciting and explores a lot of depth of character. I mean, the Matt Murdock story is one of my favorites, so I'm glad he mentioned that. And it's not that there's necessarily anything wrong with deviating from the comics, because film is a different medium. We run into this all the time. Is the book better? Is the movie better? Sometimes it's nice to have differences, because then you can go to the other medium and learn something new. But I think that for some characters, they were written so well already, so we don't need to change it.
You know, these characters, they grow more and more. It's almost as if you have this whole community of characters who are all doing different things, but also in the end trying to work together to solve these problems that in a weird way we can relate to, problems that are real to our world. How do these films walk the line with reality?
This is a good question, because my favorite films are always the ones that deal with reality a little bit more directly. So you can look at movies like Thor, and it's, you know, there's other planets and stuff involved, but a whole lot of the Avengers movies are, I mean, you look at the first Iron Man film or the first Captain America film, and they're dealing with things that are very real history in our world. And that allows us to connect to these larger than life characters and see them in very real world situations. And you look at, I mean, something, one of my favorites, The Dark Knight. I mean, you have this amazing villain in the Joker played by Heath Ledger. But in 2008, this movie sparked all kinds of discussions about the parallels between the war on terror and all this. So you have a superhero movie provoking discussions about very real life issues.
So you're headed to the theater this weekend, I understand.
I am.
What are you most looking forward to?
I am just – I can't imagine how they are going to sum all this up. And everybody I've talked to says they do it brilliantly. So I'm trying not to have too high of expectations, just because that happens when you're a moviegoer.
Oh, you have high expectations.
I do. But I think they can be met. And everyone I've talked to has said major high praises for this movie. So I'm just excited to see – it all come to a close, but also excited to plow through all the movies again.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Chris Yogerst is an assistant professor of communication in the Department of Arts and Humanities at the UW-Milwaukee. Just ahead, we round up national politics as 2020 presidential hopefuls and the sitting president himself make their way to Wisconsin. News and analysis is coming up next. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.